Hello, welcome to Fave This, a podcast about fandom and internet culture. I am joined by my co-host, Patricia Hernandez.
Hey, Gita, how's it going?
It is going.
I've heard that you've spent some time making some babes in a game called Honey Select.
Yeah, I mean, who would have known that the internet loves porn?
So what is Honey Select for people who didn't read that? What was the title of your post,
God,
which I think is probably our best headline of 2018 so far?
Yeah, it's a contender for sure. It was, I tried the game with the ultimate character creator and now I need Jesus. Yeah.
What else do you need to know? But okay, so this is, it's technically a sex game, but the demo is just the character creator, right?
Well, you can have one kind of sexual, like, scene. You can make out, get a blowjob, and have sex in the missionary position only, which is really funny to me. It's like in the demo for sex, it's only missionary.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also only come inside her, which is like really weird and gross. Anyway, I won't get into the nitty-gritty details of that part. But what people like about this game is it's got a very robust character creator. And I spent some time with it, and it was interesting. What was really interesting is figuring out what kinds of characters it was good and bad at making.
Mm-hmm. So what was it good at making, for example?
Do you want to have any kind of breast in the world? Like, it can make so many different kinds of breasts, like, with so much sort of fidelity, things that I hadn't even thought of.
Lovingly created breasts.
Yeah, they're, like, handcrafted artisanal titties, you know? Like, it was, you know, you can make the areolas puffy or not and, like, change the texture of the nipples and stuff.
Technology.
Yeah, you can give them, like, what was really cool is you can give them, like, a certain amount of weight so that they would change the physics of the breasts a little bit, and also they would sort of hang lower so that you could see the center of gravity on each breast was, like, different. The only thing I didn't like is that you couldn't make them asymmetrical, which is most people's breasts are asymmetrical.
Right.
But that was really cool. What you can't, or it was much difficult to do, is you can't make a girl with a big fat ass.
So you had, what was it that Tim said about this that you shared with me before?
Oh, God. Was it the ultimate character creator? I thought that was Tetsu Nomura.
Oh, God. So it's just, you're saying that people could have spent like hours making breasts
absolutely.
A long time.
All the people I know that have played around with it spent like 1 or 2 hours making the characters they made. And it really is like body part by body part that you're manipulating. And, you know, you can do some cool, there's some cool things about it. You can make a really buff lady. You can make a woman
Is this mostly body parts? Is it like, how many options are there for like the face?
Okay.
Like
so
traditional
about,
character creator.
You know, 20-ish sliders for the face. You can manipulate the eyes, nose, jaw, you know, not the mouth for some reason. Mm. Well, you can manipulate the mouth a little bit. You can make the lips bigger or smaller, but the general mouth shape stays the same. Mm-hmm. And it's all pretty in-depth. And then for the body, there's another dozen sliders or so. There's the most amount of sliders, I think, correspond specifically to the breasts. Mm. But
so when you told me this, obviously there are a lot of things that stand out about what this is, and you wrote a little bit about what it can make, what it can't make. But another thing that stood out to me is just kind of seeing who was playing it, because it was surprisingly, because you kind of expect, you hear anime porn game and you think, well, there's a certain type of, I don't know, basement dwelling, whatever, who plays this pervert.
Like the Simpsons, like comic book nerd guy is the image that it evokes, you know?
Yeah, but I was seeing a lot of women playing it.
I
was seeing a lot of like, quote unquote, like progressive people playing it. And so I wanted to talk to you about like, what do you think is the appeal of character creators? Because I don't think it's specific to this. You look at that one MMO, which name I'm forgetting right now, but it
Black
had this
Desert Online.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that had a really incredible character creator. Like, I know absolutely nothing about what the game is, but I've just seen so many people make all these different characters in it. And then obviously there are the more, like, you know, people always talk about like the Bethesda character creator, which is always garbage, and like the
it's always really bad.
Yeah, it's or the Mass Effect character creator where you can't make your characters look like what they look like when you build them in the actual games, but it's like there's always a lot of focus in like how do we recreate these characters? How do we make what we want to see? And I was curious if you had any thoughts as to like why people are obsessed with character creators.
The porn game specifically, I feel like I see a lot of queer women playing this game, a lot of like out lesbians. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that there's like not a lot of porn for lesbians specifically. A lot of lesbian porn is also for straight men to watch. Mm-hmm. So you always, I mean, what I found was like I was making a girl that I thought was cute, basically. And I was thinking like I had never really even sat down and thought about like what, you know, what kind of musculature on a girl's arms do I think is like really cute. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice and refreshing to be able to make that. But, you know, beyond porn into just like standard games, a lot of it does have to do with women in games, queer people in games aren't getting the content pre-made for them. I remember I have a friend who was doing QA on Bioshock Infinite, and she told me that apparently there was like a long internal discussion about whether or not Booker DeWitt should be hot. And like all the women in QA were like, no, he make him hot. Like he's voiced by Troy Baker. Uh-huh. Make him hot. Like we know that you're never going to see the character, but like, just make him a hot guy. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it doesn't really matter too much, but it is, it does feel nice to feel pandered to. Mm-hmm. And it happens so infrequently in games that whenever I see a good-ass character creator, I'm always like, I'm going to make the hottest guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like the a guy that I specifically think is hot because I'll never see him in video games.
Right, because, I mean, you can make the argument that a lot of the guys in games are hot, but in kind of like that generic action. Like, you know, have you seen that image of all the Chris's in Hollywood?
Yes,
and they all
have to just
kind of say, they all kind of look exactly alike. And so what it sounds like you're saying is that this gives people room to kind of make what game companies themselves won't actually make. Or they're giving them, I guess they're making it in the sense that they're giving them the option, but like they wouldn't put that in the marketing material as like the...
Yeah.
Lead,
you wouldn't
whatever.
See, like, I keep remembering, like, Connor Oberst from Bright Eyes was the
that
big
heart. That was not where I thought you were,
okay. He was, like, a big heartthrob, like, amongst my high school friends. Mm-hmm. And the sort of image of male attractiveness that was being sold to us at the time was not at all that. It was, you know, like all the Chris's in Hollywood, basically. Mm-hmm. I still don't know which Chris Pine is. Like, I feel like he's the one that dated... what's her name from Attack the Show, who was also in the next X-Men movie. Anyway, Psylocke. She was Psylocke. But
oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They dated. I think that's that, Chris.
Okay.
But anyway. But, like, there is something that we saw that wasn't being acknowledged about, like, our own sexuality, which is that we were not really attracted to these really buff guys. We were way more attracted to this really sensitive, scarecrow-looking-ass man. He's, like, really great. I don't know.
If we have any developers listening, now you know you need to make more scarecrow men. You need to make more fish men, as evidenced by the Oscar-winning...
fish men with nice asses, because, like, they spend so long sculpting the butt on that suit, Guillermo del Toro. He's talked about it in interviews repeatedly.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So. And it's not just that. You look at the way that people talk about Thane in Mass Effect. I think there's a reason for that. Like, it's I don't know how I would judge attractiveness when it comes to, like, a reptile-looking thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it has to do a little bit with there's that, like, I don't know why people believe this, but people always – I've heard this said – more than once, that women are more less attracted to the physical and more attracted to the emotional. Mm-hmm. And that's not entirely true. But, I mean, I've had, like, plenty of meaningless sex with hot guys in my life. But if I'm going to, like, enter into an emotional, like, romance in a story with someone, I want there to be some kind of personality, like, mm-hmm. a sexy voice can't mm-hmm. hurt. Like, apparently, I haven't played Mass Effect, but Thane's, like, romance story is really, like, it's melodramatic intense. And intense. Yeah, and, like, that's what is appealing. Like, that is what sexy is mm-hmm. in that scenario.
I think it's probably more important for games to nail that because there are so many limits in what they can produce, like, in terms of, like, actual erotic stuff.
Yeah.
A, because, you know, the age rating stuff, like, you can only go so far before suddenly it's AO. And, like, B, the technology of, like, making humans look like they're actually interacting with each other is, like, shockingly hard.
Yeah.
You get a lot of games where, like, people are kissing each other, quote unquote, but it doesn't really look like humans are.
Yeah, it doesn't look right. Their faces are just really close. Like, that's what it looks like. It looks like their heads are just really close.
Or like Ken and Barbie, like, mashed together.
It doesn't look like they're interacting with each other or even touching each other. It looks like they're really close to touching each other, but mm-hmm. not. It's I think what makes a lot of the Dragon Age sex scenes, I just got to the sex scene with Colin in mm-hmm. my playthrough. It's really good. But what makes it good is that it, you know, it does the lead up and then there's a cutaway. He, like, shoves all the shit off his desk and they're going to bone on the desk. It's a super hot idea, you know. And then it cuts away.
It's not
away.
The war table, is it?
No, it's not the war table. I feel like that would be too much.
Yeah. it's like months of painstaking work and then you just lose it. And then you have to explain that to your teams.
Yeah, you find one of those little markers in the back of your dress. And you're like, I don't know how that got there. but yeah, you and then it cuts through a window. So you see them making out, but, like, vaguely. And then it cuts to the next morning where you're in a bed and he is naked in your clothes. But you're sitting conveniently in front of his dick so that the camera never sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that gives enough sort of suggestion of, like, hot, like, spontaneous sex activity without actually animating any mm-hmm. of it. And a lot of, you know, I think the most lovingly detailed shot in that scene is the one where he's shoving everything off of the desk because they animate everything falling off of the desk. And you can tell, like, a lot of time went mm-hmm. into that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more about getting excited about the idea of, oh, holy shit, this guy I thought was so buttoned up is going to fuck me right on this desk.
Yeah, I feel like BioWare had a lot of fun with the scenes in that game because there was a – I don't know if you've seen all of them, but there's the one with – well, you've probably seen the one with Iron Brill
because
you
really
keep
good.
Yeah, where it's just – they don't show them sleeping with each other, but they show people continually going into the room and accidentally, like, seeing them. And it's just, like, their shock and laughter. And it's like, well, that feels very authentic even though you don't necessarily see them boning.
Yeah, and, it gives, like, a context to the sort of nature of the relationship where, like, the Inquisitor and Iron Bull spent a lot of time together naked and they've been keeping it a secret. But now, you know.
Somehow. I feel like that would be hard to keep a secret.
He's such a large man to keep a secret.
Also, he just won't stop talking about it.
He loves to fuck. He loves talking about fucking and he loves to fuck. Man, Freddie Prinze Jr. had a really good time in that game. Every time you hear him say a voice line, you can tell how happy he is to be this giant horny man. but yeah, it makes it integrates it into the world of the fiction where other characters can see this and interact with it and have their own opinions about what's happening here. And it's implied they are shocked and overwhelmed by the size of Iron Bull's dick, which...
Yeah, sure. See, I mean, even that in itself, you look at earlier BioWare sex scenes and, like, they were so detached from the rest of the game, like Mass Effect. And I think also Dragon Age Origins, you slept with a character right before the, like, big battle mm-hmm. most of the time. Not all of them, but I think most of the time. So then there was no real time for anyone to react to it. There was no real time for that relationship to keep developing because that was, like, the end point But now it's like, you know, you can sleep with someone like near the start of the game and then other people react to it and it changes your relationship. Some people get mad. Some people are like kind of laugh about it. And something that I appreciated in Andromeda is also that the characters just pair off. Like if you don't get involved with them, they'll do their own thing. You'll hear about it. And it's just like, oh, they have an actual life.
Yeah.
I just wish it went even further. Well, I don't know how this would be handled, but even further that, like, if these two are dating, that irreparably, like, damages the relationship with this person who no longer wants to be on the team. And, like, I wish there were more just...
You wish there was more drama.
Stakes. Yeah.
You know, drama in space and or theater.
Well, because you got to think about it. Like, I was rewatching an episode of The Office where it's, like, these two characters sleep with each other and, like, the entire office is fucking talking about it. And, like, some people are mad and some people are just, like, kind of, like, jeering and, like... But everyone's talking about it. Right?
Everyone has a reaction to it because they are all working together.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, they come to the same space every day and those politics are important. Yeah. It makes me remember that there's a line in the second episode of Gossip Girl, the greatest television show of all time.
We should have an episode about Gossip Girl.
We 100% should. But Kristen Bell, the narrator, is...
I didn't know Kristen Bell was the narrator.
Yeah, she's the narrator. And once you hear that, you can't unhear it. But she's, you know... She makes a cameo in like one of the last episodes of the series. Kristen Bell, the narrator.
I'm just imagining she's narrating it from The Bad Place.
That's one of her karmic punishments is to narrate Gossip Girl.
Oh my God, that she has to watch these teenagers' lives unfold.
man, she would hate that.
And she can't be negative about it.
No, she has to. Okay, the line that she says in this episode, which is, I'm just so proud that it aired on television, is it going to be a three-way or D-Day?
She always has the corniest lines, but you kind of got to love it. I don't know.
I just, like, I want video games to give that kind of emphasis to whether or not someone's going to have sex. Is, are they going to fuck or is it going to be like World War II?
You just basically, I feel like so many games would be improved with like kind of like teenage level drama. Cause like you get older and like that stuff doesn't go away. It just takes on different forms.
Yes.
Like people are still petty as shit and like ridiculous and absurd.
My mom told me that like all of life is like high school and I'm sorry to report that she is very correct. And like you get better with dealing with it though. All those kinds of things still crop up. Like I've had like living situations where whether or not someone did the dishes suddenly became the most infuriating and, like, dramatic thing in the entire world.
Well, it's kind of like, do you watch the reality TV show on Netflix that's, like, from Japan and it's,
Terrace House.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched it, but I keep hearing about the meat incident or something. Have you?
I haven't seen the meat incident, but, like, the thing about Terrace House.
But it's similarly, like, mundane, right?
Like, yeah, like, the thing about Terrace House is that it's entirely mundane. Like, people come to this house just to, like, live and like they keep all of their old jobs. They don't do the real world thing where they just like make them stay in the house. Like they keep their old jobs and they come in to hang out and they're not all specifically there to find love, but some of them are. And they
just
kind of
do
shit.
What is the purpose for the people who don't? They just want to be on a reality TV show?
Yeah, basically.
Does it make them famous or like what?
I don't know. It just is a pleasant time. It's just like a nice time.
I guess.
They live in like a baller house.
Yeah,
and,
I was
like,
about to say, do they not have to pay rent?
Yeah, like one time they went to Hawaii and lived there. And like other times they've always had really nice houses with terraces and that they have, you know, one of them had an indoor like a pool, which is really chill. So it just seems like, hey, you know, why not live in a really nice house for a couple of months or so?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people can drop in and come out at any time, too.
I didn't know that either. You can leave and then just come back? Like you're not out? You can't, can you not get kicked out?
I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I don't think anyone ever has been kicked out. I think people elect to leave and then new people will come in to replace them. Which is, I think, pretty cool. You can just be like, I'm not feeling it. Want to go home. Or I got to go back to my like actual life now. Sorry.
They didn't take the trash out this week. I'm done. Bye.
God, my reality show weapon of choice has always been America's Next Top Model, which is...
Did you see Tyra Banks' tweet last night?
Oh, my God.
For Adam Rippon was... she was like, but fashion.
But make it fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That... Me and my roommate watched that episode of the show recently. Adam Rippon was wearing this fucking incredible, like, leather holster to the Oscars, which was so good. Adam Rippon has captured my heart. He's perfect.
What do you think he's going to go on to do next? I guess he can probably be on anything now. Everyone knows who he is.
Yeah, so. He's probably not going to the Olympics again.
No. 28,
That was his last one. He got a medal, so, like, he's happy.
We're going to see him on America's Top Model or,
I'm
like,
sure.
American Idol or some yeah. like...
No, he's going to have... He would be perfect for television, so I'm sure that he's got some kind of offer lined up for some kind of reality show, which I would absolutely watch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, get a camera crew to follow him around. He's just like, I saw a tweet from him the other day that was like during a photo shoot. He's like in his like skating outfit and he's doing this like very, very like intense pose. And the caption he put on it was, "While you were being heterosexual, I studied the blade."
What?
Yeah. He's really good.
You know, I'm sorry that we just keep jumping from topic to topic.
No,
whatever,
go ahead.
Is our podcast.
Yeah.
Did you follow the thing about the two ice skaters who basically, like, fuck on the ice, but, like,
oh my God, yes.
fuck on the ice? And
yeah,
people are, like, trying to figure out if they actually slept with the – and that was, like
– Yep, the Canadian Paris team of what's-his-fuck and what's-his-fuck. Anyway, they do that one lift where it looks like he's just eating her out.
Yeah.
Because it just – her crotch just
and she makes this expression.
Yeah.
So the way that I'm going to connect this to video games is that I feel like that was, like, a international ARG in which people were trying to figure out if they were sleeping with each other and just pulling these different, like...
There was a Tumblr dedicated to, like, GIFs of them, like, touching each other casually and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, like, this international investigation of whether or not these two people were fucking. It was amazing.
And it's... I feel like that's a really interesting game that I kind of like to play, and even though I feel ashamed of it, where it's, like... I look at interactions online between people and I, like, try to read between the lines. Like, oh, wait a minute. This person faved, like, 20 million of this person's tweet. What is that? Are they dating? Did they fuck? Like, what is it? What does it mean?
Yep. I'm really good at that game. If you ever want to know who someone's dating, you should just come to me.
It's like, decipher this Twitter profile.
Oh, absolutely. I mean... You know what happened when I found out that Edgar Wright doesn't know that his likes are public? moving on. But yeah, I mean, I feel like what's missing from most non-porn video games when it comes to sex and attraction is this kind of tension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's not just, I think BioWare games get it the closest,
mm-hmm.
where there's always all this lead up to, like, the actual beginning of a relationship and then the sex scene that you get, or at least in the more recent BioWare games,
mm-hmm.
where they realize that people get attracted to small interactions, and then they like a baby bird, they just like fucking drip feed you just like a little morsel of like a, you know, a sexy voice line or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes when you go into the war room with Cullen, he'll breathlessly say, "I've been waiting for you to get here," and it's just like so hot.
You make me want to replay this game even though I know it's 100 hours long.
Yeah, I spent last weekend trying to crank out a whole bunch of character quests, and that was, like, literally my entire weekend. So I had to take a break from playing for a little bit. But it's a fucking good game, and, like, that's the shit that makes it good, right? Is that exact shit. Is that you only hear that line sometimes. You could play that game entire game and never hear it, even if you've mm-hmm. romanced Cullen. But when you do hear it, it's, like, the hottest thing you've ever heard.
Can I tell you, this is really quick, about a shameful moment that I had in a game involving, like, a character that I could bone.
Yes.
Again, Divinity Original Sin 2. So I'm playing as a human, and again, there's Fane, who's a living skeleton. And we're on this boat, and then he's just suddenly... Because, like, most of the game is him just kind of being an ass because he's not alive. So he looks a lot of the drama that you're experiencing as, like, I don't have time for this human bullshit, like... Whatever this is, like, I live for thousands of years. I'm not going to care about this. It, like, you're just a speck in my life or whatever.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden he just, like, flirts with you and he's, like, he asks you, like, wouldn't you sleep with me? And I had this, like, dilemma of, like, okay, I know we all like to joke on Twitter.com about fucking the skeleton.
Yeah.
But I just had this moment of, like, I don't know how this would work. Maybe I'm just not being creative enough. I was like, I also don't know what you would have to look like for me to consider you attractive as a pile of bones. And then I was like, oh, buddy, I don't know. I'm just because I've just started talking to you. And then he was pretty much like, you're racist. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, no. And then I felt so bad. But it was kind of true. But I just had this moment of like, it's not that I'm not attracted to you, but I also just don't know what attraction to a skeleton would mean.
Yeah. So you didn't go to the bone zone.
No, I didn't. Not yet anyway. I don't know if that's completely closed off for me. I think there are other skeletons in the future that I can meet and potentially sleep with.
Eventually he'll learn it wasn't that you're racist. It's that you just weren't attracted to him.
He, like I said, he was an asshole to me that entire time. But like when he said it, I was like, I guess you're right. Because part of the dilemma was like, I don't know how this would physically work. I don't know what this means. Yeah. And I also don't know if I'm attracted to you.
Yeah.
He's been around for a long time.
That is such a dilemma. That is so.
Video
I'm
games.
Like, I don't know. Now I'm thinking about whether or not I would fuck a skeleton. I mean, like, probably yes. If I had the opportunity. Would you fuck a ghost?
Again, I guess if
they
can.
They can haunt something.
Yeah,
you know?
I was about to say they can probably.
They can haunt a dildo, you know? Like, it'd be fine. Yeah, I think I'd fuck a ghost. As I've written about Kotaku, I would definitely go to
vampire. If they're not like a scary ghost that looks like they were just murdered or something.
Yeah. If they were like an enigmatic, like, you know, poetic ghost, you know, then I would like definitely be totally down a clown. Would absolutely have sex with a vampire. Werewolves.
Yeah, you wrote an entire piece.
I wrote an entire piece about how I would have sex with a vampire. Werewolves, probably also. But like werewolves are only werewolves like once a month. So it's like.
So yeah, so would you sleep with them when they're werewolves or when they're not werewolves?
Listen, let me tell you a story. I watched Beauty and the Beast recently, and Dan Stevens is a beast in that movie, and Dan Stevens is, like, so sexy on a level where it disarms me when I see his face. When Legion comes back, like, you're not going to be able to hear about anything else with this. And Dan Stevens is the beast in that movie, and I was like, well, finally, the prince is going to be just as hot as the beast is. Mm-hmm. But no, Dan Stevens as the prince is like kind of not sexy. Dan Stevens as the beast, though, that's really hot. I'm really into it.
So you're just saying that you're like, you would fuck any supernatural.
Yeah, I think
like,
so.
What is not on the table?
I know that penetrative sex is not the end all be all of like having sex. But with a skeleton, how would I give, like, I'm sure I'd be able to receive, like, any kind of, like, thing
that's
of
what
sex.
I was wondering.
Like, how
I was
would
like,
I give, like, make you feel good if you're a skeleton? You
yeah,
don't have
I,
nerve endings
I was
anymore.
Just like, what? I don't, yeah, I was just like trying, and I'm sure probably if you went through with it, he would explain.
Yeah.
Oh, but then the other thing you have to consider is that Fane can wear the skin of other people, and I don't know if that skin becomes alive or if it's like, just like dead to the touch or something. Like, I don't know the specifics of that.
Okay, that's interesting. That
but then
is a
even
whole
that,
other
that comes, that becomes fucked up because.
There's a whole consent issue on top of that now.
Well, no. You have to kill someone to take their face. So it's
so
like.
That's another thing you gotta worry about is like committing a murder in order to have
sex.
Yeah,
it's like imagine just being at the park, people watching, like, who do we wanna kill?
so we can both.
But like, I don't want you to kill them in front of me because if I see anything then I'm not gonna wanna sleep with the person that I've just saw like a bunch of blood on the floor that was like screaming in front of me. So you
go like,
do that.
Immediately post murder is not necessarily when I would want to have sex. It seems like it'd be a total buzzkill. Also like maybe just be exhausting, you know. Humans fight, you know.
But you say that you would sleep with a vampire and I feel like a lot of the erotic fiction with them is them like pretty much like murdering people in the middle
well,
of doing.
My reasoning about wanting to sleep with a vampire is that I feel like I already have like the whininess of vampires is totally exemplified in like everyone that I was wanting to have sex with when I was like 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. So like if you've ever met like a 21-year-old who's like a crust punk and like has strong opinions about anarchy and shit, you've probably slept with a vampire. Like that is what a vampire is.
Sleeping with a vampire
with
more
a
likely
of,
than you think.
So he will suck all of the joy out of your life. which is a little bit like sucking blood.
Jesus Christ.
You know the kind of guy. Like, it's a really specific. He's got a bandana and, like, kind of a beard sometimes. And unprompted, he likes to give you all of his political opinions. And they're usually, pretty woke, but, like, in a way where it sounds like he's putting you down for not being as woke as him.
Hmm.
Yeah, that kind of guy. And he wears all black, and he has, like, black Carhartt jeans that he's, like, sewing patches on with floss.
I love that you have this all figured out.
Yeah.
So before we move on to the other non-sexual topic, listeners, write to us and tell us, would you fuck a ghost? Would you fuck a skeleton? Would you fuck a vampire? Would
you
fuck
a werewolf? I need you to go through all of these. Ghost, skeleton, vampire, werewolf.
Fishman?
Fishman. Yes.
What else?
The answer to that is yes. The Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
All right.
Yeah.
So
I really need to know. It's for science.
And we'll let you know the results next week.
Yes.
So the other topic, which is much less controversial, I suppose, is that we are both obsessed with Into the Breach, which is the new game by the makers of FTL.
Yeah, that game fucking owns, man. So the one thing that immediately grabbed me where I was like, oh, no.
You want to tell people
okay.
What it is?
Well, yeah, it's this the main fiction of the game is you are a mech pilot and you're trying to save the city from these bug creatures called Vex. And
they're pretty much kaiju. It's like mech versus kaiju.
It's mech versus kaiju. Jason Schreier called it kaiju chess, and that's basically how it plays, where you have – it's a turn-based strategy where you're trying to block attacks from hitting buildings so your power grid doesn't go down and you don't lose a lot of civilians. And you only get a certain amount of moves per turn, and you can have one undo that you can use once.
Which I really appreciate.
I've never,
maybe it's just that I don't play enough tactics games, but I've never seen that. And even just the fact that it lets you undo, I feel like there's so many games where I do something and I immediately regret it because I pressed the wrong button. And this one is like, no.
As soon as I lock it in, I know that I've done the exact wrong thing. And like, that's when you need the undo the most. And you only get one to use for the entire game. But it is so
nice. You can undo a move if you haven't attacked, but you can undo the entire turn once.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That explains some things. Okay. But what I really, really love about it is, like, it's basically a video game version of, what's that movie with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt that was based off of that light novel, All You Need Is Kill? They rebranded it as Live, Die, Repeat, but it's something tomorrow.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm gonna look it up on my phone. Yeah. But in that movie, Tom Cruise gains the power of being able to relive a day every time he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like a really charming movie, especially if you like to see Tom Cruise die repeatedly.
It's a video game-ass movie.
It's a video game-ass movie.
Because, like, you know, in a game, when you're playing it, you don't necessarily know how to go through it, and you kind of die, and then you learn again, and you go through the same thing.
Yeah.
The same thing
and you
happens
watch
with him.
That process of sort of Tom Cruise making mistakes and learning from them in the very video gamey way. It's called Edge of Tomorrow.
There we go.
Yeah.
Isn't there a sequel?
Movie. I don't know.
I love
there
Emily Blunt in that, but
she's
sorry.
So good in that. Anyway, she looked great at the Oscars last night. But yeah, it reminds me so much of Edge of Tomorrow, and that whole aesthetic immediately sucked me in. Because when you lose, when the power grid is totally gone out, so the power grid, it doesn't recharge after the end of battle.
It's basically like your HP bar, right?
Yeah, and it's for, you have an island that you're trying to secure every section of the island for. And the power grid is the HP bar for that entire island, so it won't.
The more buildings that are destroyed, the less power you have. And when you reach zero, like, that's it.
And you don't have a ton of power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the most you see on the islands I've been to has been, like, sometimes it's, like, 5 bars, sometimes it's, like, 8. But basically, if a building gets hit, you should be not having that happen.
Yeah.
That should just not be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, when you lose, though, when the power totally goes out, you go into the breach, quote-unquote, to go to another timeline where you could possibly save everybody from the
Vex. Yes, so there's, like, time travel in this. You can only take one pilot to the other timelines, but when you do, everything resets.
Mm-hmm.
So say you fucked up in the first island, then you kind of have to redo it, but you get to keep whatever power-ups this character had. So there's this kind of the sense of, like, repetition. I guess this is kind of where the roguelike elements come in, because you like lose basically all your progress, but your character retains some of the stuff.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting mechanic, but it's also painful when you like level up an entire team and then you have to pick the one person who gets to survive.
It sucks. That part sucks. I am so attached to the original three pilots you get to that it's like hard to. It's hard to choose between them. I like the three of them so much that if I don't go back, like Cameron wrote about this in the week. Cameron, our new weekend editor, wrote about how he likes the original three team so much, and you're supposed to kind of abandon them after a while when you get new pilots. But I like that starter guy. Mm-hmm. I like all his voice lines. Well, not voice lines, but I like his little text. You know,
I got
lines.
Rid of him pretty quick.
Really, I like him.
I'm not saying that I disliked him. I just got a character that was like. Overpowered next to him, that's
nice.
All.
Nice.
But yeah, I did reach that point. So I beat the game like on my third or fourth try. And then I had all these unlocks because I went through each island. And so I've been trying all the new mechs. And like, they're really complex in ways that actually make the game harder. I'm sure if you spend the time learning how they move. Because like, for example, there's one that you can kind of like shoot a bomb. And if you shoot it at a building, it won't harm the building, but it'll, like, damage everything around it by pushing it once. And so, like, that's useful, but you can also fuck yourself up because it'll damage a building next to it. So it's, like, you have to be careful, and I keep fucking that up. But it's a lot of stuff like that, or you'll have mechs that can freeze everything on the board and, like... That becomes complex because sometimes the extra challenges are kill X number of enemies, but if you're freezing them, then it becomes a little bit harder to kill them because you have to hit them twice. So it's just like it makes the game more interesting but also more complex in like ways that I, if maybe I were a better player, I'd be able to deal with ease. But it's I kind of prefer staying with the simpler mechs where I'd like know exactly how it works and I don't have to like overthink.
I saw on Twitter someone showed me the nickname or just tweeted out the nicknames he had given those original three mechs, and it was Punchy, Shooty, Far Shooty.
It's like, that's really good.
Yeah, because it took me a while to adjust to how those three characters, how they affect things on the board. As soon as you add a new element,
everything is
changes.
Different.
Everything is different, and you have to like rework your strategies.
I almost kind of wish... And I know I can kind of understand why they didn't do it, that you start off with a, like, different array of mechs that are, like, complex and you're, like, constantly getting different ones because it's so easy to just kind of get in that routine of, like, not wanting to change it. So, like, now I'm at the stage where it's, like, I appreciate this game, but I don't know that I want to replay it with mechs that kind of make things a little bit more difficult. But the other thing that I wanted to mention that's, I think, really notable about this game is that when you start it out, it's... really difficult. Like I kept dying on the first mission at first.
Yeah.
But somehow, and I don't know how they do it. What's their name? Subset Games?
Subset Games, yeah.
Yeah. They managed to make failure really fun. And this is the thing with FTL. Like when you played it, you knew that eventually everything would go to shit. Your entire ship would just be on fire. You would lose everything. Like that was just a given while playing that game. But there was still like this draw to it. Like it was still so incredibly fun. Yeah.
There was something about FTL. FTL really grabbed me. I mean, I was like in the midst of a very bad depressive episode when I got FTL. And it was one of the few games that would run on my 2008 MacBook, which at the time was not as much of a burden as it is on my life now. Mm-hmm. But it was so easy to restart things after you'd failed that it made it easy to incentivize, you know, it made it easy to think, okay, well, just got to start back from the beginning. And now I can see exactly what I did wrong here. I will be prepared for this next time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Into the Breach has the same kind of quality where restarting, it just restarts for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even have to worry about going back to the start screen or abandoning your ship. You just immediately go back there. And then you also sort of know the goals of the game are so easy to understand. Don't let the buildings get hit. You understand better just sort of like, okay, so that, you know, if I'm stuck in front of a building, here's now a new strategy I have, or here, I'm going to try something new for the next time that that happens, because I know now that that is going to be something that affects me. And I think it's better that in the beginning you eat shit so much so frequently, because you are learning those lessons so quickly.
Right.
Like, it's not
as painful to lose on the first map, because when you restart, like,
yeah, you've only been there for like a minute or two, basically. Yeah. And that is, you know, it might be frustrating in that, why am I not better at this? But then you get better so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and you see the results of your learning so quickly also, mm-hmm. because they give you all that information on the screen all the time about how well you're doing. And that really makes a difference also. That's something I also really liked about FTL. It's why these games don't like screenshot well. We were having this problem in the office trying to figure out what to use as top images for posts about FTL or Into the Breach.
Mm-hmm.
And because they give you basically everything you need to know on the screen at all times, it looks, you know,
there's just a lot going on.
I think the pixel art looks really, really good,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of have to zoom in on it really, like, close cropped to get the parts that look great, because on the sides is, like,
too much UI.
Too much for screenshots
purposes.
Yeah.
In-game, it's perfectly fine.
In-game, like, I love having the portraits on the side, and the power bar up at the top, it, like, makes you feel like you're inside of one of those mechs.
Oh,
like, you're in the control booth.
I hadn't even thought about that, yeah.
That's just how I feel.
Mm-hmm. No, I see it.
Yeah. It's just, when you're trying to do something for an internet website, it's difficult to be like, well, do we excise all the UI to get this good screenshot, which maybe people who haven't read the game are just not going to understand, or mm-hmm. do we find some key art, and there's only one piece of key art?
Yeah.
It's a good game. It's such a good game.
Although this conversation makes me want to go back and replay FTL, because there was a re-release that had like a bunch of new scenarios.
Yeah, Chris Avalon, who also wrote for Into the Breach,
mm-hmm.
he wrote
and also wrote for Divinity. He wrote the character that I keep having dilemmas about, Fane, the skeleton. I guess Chris Avalon has just written all the good games, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Chris Avalon, I went down a little bit of a hole. I was watching there's a video essayist who has like a decently sized YouTube channel, Noah Gervais.
Mm-hmm.
He has a series where he does these very in-depth videos on a bunch of those classic RPGs. Some of which I haven't played because they were just, like, before my time.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a great one on the original Fallout. It's not just the original Fallout. He goes through all five of the then five of the Fallout games, which is, like, a whole lot of talking about Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
But you can really see he does that and Baldur's Gate and, like, man, what was the game I was thinking that I really wanted to play? Planescape Torment.
That is on my to-play list. That's
perpetually on my to-play list. Because the ideas that are in it, when talking to my ex who was really into Planescape Torment and the original two Fallout games and Chris Avalon's writing in general, the ideas that it is, the themes of the game just sound so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the idea, like the overarching question of what can change a man, you know, whatever.
This is probably an entire podcast onto itself, but something that I never really understood is that, like, you get all these discussions about, like, how visual novels aren't really games, but you look at those older CRPGs, and the things that people talk about the most are the dialogue choices.
Like,
there's just so much reading.
I know, like, most of my friends who played the original Dragon Age Origins, they've told me, you know what, you should just get the, you know, kill everything in one click mod, because the combat in those games is not worth it. It's the conversations
that
are worth
it. I like the combat in those games.
Yeah. I mean, I like the combat in those games, too.
But also, I think they understand that not everyone plays it for the combat, because the more modern Dragon Age, I think, has, like, a story
there
mode
is,
or something.
Yeah, it's not quite a story mode. The easy mode just makes it, you just press the attack button, basically.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm playing this time, because I just, like, I want to do some of the fighting, because I do like, you know, tinting armor and stuff like that. But I'm mostly playing for the narrative this time around because I've already played the game once.
Yeah, and I guess it's probably easier the second time around because you know not to spend a ton of time in the Hinterlands.
Yes, it is so nice to know that you can leave the Hinterlands. If you have not yet played Dragon Age Inquisition, you can leave the Hinterlands at any time. Just so you
know.
Please
do so.
Please, don't get trapped there. Go back to Haven and hang out with everybody at Haven and then unlock a new area. But yeah, I mean, I want to go back and play Planescape Torment, mostly for the writing. Like, I've heard there's cool things in the game mechanics as well, like the idea that you're, like, plucking out your eyeballs and putting new eyeballs in to get new skills. That sounds really dark and weird and cool. But it's mostly, like, I want to read that game. Yeah, you know, yeah. Like a novel. I want to read that game. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear that. You hear that for like writers like Patrick Weeks and like, you know, David Guider is another one, and Chris Avellone. And I think that is part of why those games are so classic. If you look at like classic RPGs, mechanically, I don't, you know, it's like D&D. Like, they basically are just video game version of D&D, and I can mm-hmm. play D&D at literally any time. So, but what makes them so lasting is that they have such good writing. Mm-hmm. Like, astonishingly good writing in times. Like, I think their writing in the original Fallout is really, really, like, nuanced and interesting.
Yeah, I replayed it recently, and, like, the combat is kind of shitty, like it hasn't fully, like there's a lot of bullshit mm-hmm. in it, but the writing, just even I feel like it's more the overall like tone of it, it's just very stark, and I feel like newer Fallouts are like more about like zany shit, but this one was like, it's the post-apocalypse, everyone's terrified, no one really understands how this happened, we've heard about like mutants and stuff, but like we haven't really seen them, they're like more of a rumor, and it's just like, it's just stark, which I, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's this old and the post-apocalypse is in so many things, but this manages to kind of nail a different part of it, I think, that you don't often see.
Yeah. And I think, well, I mean, the strength of the writing created a franchise that has lasted for an extremely long time, and one that has crossed over, it sort of in appeal has crossed over into the mainstream. Like the sort of specific Fallout world was so fascinating that you sort of see elements of it crop up outside of just video game culture. If there's game, there's like a couple of games that people who don't necessarily identify themselves as gamers will play or have heard of, and one of them is Fallout. Mm-hmm. Like, it just made such a strong impact because of the strength of its world building and its writing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lots of people love Skyrim too, but they don't love it because of the Elder Scrolls world.
The writing.
Yeah, they love it because you can fucking do anything and you punch a dragon and shit, you know? Mm-hmm. People love Fallout because they think Nuka-Cola is cool and they want a Pip-Boy, you know, like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is really fascinating to me. And it all started with that one game, which had some kind of weird bullshitty combat, but like really, really good writing and a really good plot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can see that in Into the Breach a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of surprising that because a lot of tactics games like that, you don't remember them for the writing. You mostly remember them mm-hmm. for the tactics, the combat and whatever. But like this one, the writing is really sparse. Like, it's not like you're going to be sitting there like clicking through a ton of dialogue. Like, at most, characters will say like one line after like combat, or when they do something specific, or like when you first get to an island, then they introduce themselves.
They're very finely tuned sentences, especially when your comrades die. The lines are always the one thing they'll say that will make you feel the worst about it, which is like, that's a real, you know, I'm doing the chef kiss thing with my fingers right now. It's a spicy meatball. That's really good. But yeah, I mean, In the Breach, it's a good video game. Basically,
you should play it.
You should play it. Please
hit us
up with your...
One of the best games of 2018.
Man, it's so good. Good luck not playing that game literally all of the time. That's it for us this week. You should... Let's me like go into the whole spiel. Hang on. That's it for us this week. If you liked this episode, you should leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere podcasts are found. Basically, you can find us and leave us a review. We really appreciate them, and we read all of them, and I think they're really nice. You can also, if you want to get in touch with us, you should email us at favethis@kotaku.com or tweet at either of us with the hashtag favethis. We are... Both, you can find both of our work on Kotaku.com, because that is where we both work. We want to give a special shout out, special thanks to Executive Director of Audio, Mandana Mofidi, as well as Levi Sharp, who was in the booth helping us get set up. We also wanted to thank Mellow Makes, who did our theme song, and Stuart Wood, who did the music that we played during the commercials. That's it for us this week. Thank you for listening. Come back next week. Goodbye.